Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning. Welcome to Sound Insight. This is Tom Curran. It's great to be with you today on this Monday of Lent. I'm joined by Father Kurt Nagel and Father Jeff Lewis. Good morning, fathers.
Good morning, Tom.
It is great to be with you. And just it's great to get started. We're going to today, I want to say we have a bunch of Lenten quotes, but I said that last time with Father Lewis. And I'm going to let you, Father Nagel, say how many quotes did we get through?
Well, I would...
We had 16. We had 16
and
quotes.
And I wasn't there, so this is just completely from past experience.
So that's one-third. That's one-third of the voices gone.
Yeah,
so.
And I would say you probably got through zero. You just started talking and never stopped?
Yeah.
Two.
I think we didn't hit the first quote until like minute 45. So you're right. The introduction lasted almost the entire program. So we did. We actually still blamed you, Father.
Well, because that's fair. I wasn't anywhere near it, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, you see, you would have restrained us and you would have moved us on, you see?
Yeah, so, that's good.
All right.
Good.
Well, today at Sound Insight, we're going to have another great conversation with these wonderful priests about the holy season of Lent. Back in a minute with Sound Insight. Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out. DrTomCurran.com, DrTomCurran.com. Welcome back to the program. Father Nagel is going to lead us in a scripture reading and a prayer.
I'd like to go back to Matthew 6. When you pray, do not be like the hypocrites who love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on street corners so that others may see them. Amen, I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you pray, go to your inner room, close the door, and pray to your father in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will repay you. Gracious God, Father, we do ask your blessings as we try to just intensify our relationship with you, open ourselves in prayer. Let all those who are listening, who are on this Lenten journey with us, may our prayer life become just more of an encounter with you, more personal, more real. And so bless us in this next hour that we might also, again, aid one another in our Lenten practices. And we ask this through Christ our Lord. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much, Father Nagel. Just love to check in with you all on how your Lent is going. Father Nagel, since we've missed you last week, we'd love to hear, first of all, just a check-in. How is your Lent?
You know, I had a radical turn in my Lent early on. I think it was before, you know, it was after last time I was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and that is I found, maybe I said this, I forget, I'm 60, but the idea of fasting from blogs and news took a route, the war started, right, and I was all caught up in this, and I realized it was a sign to me of a bigger problem in my life that I was just spending way too much time glued to and reading blogs and other media sources. And again, maybe I said this last time, but it's really been, so I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm a media junkie. So my friends used to call me a print culture junkie, but now it's just media. And I do get newspapers, read them, but I check in the morning now what the news is, and that's it for the whole day. And I check on Catholic websites, news sites, just twice a week. And it's been really good. It's been a detachment, liberation that's really worked out, and so far so good. I've been able to go cold turkey in this, and so that has been a really positive thing for me, a part of Lent. And the rest has gone well too. I was able to go. I missed last week because I was over in Bremerton giving some talks over there to the classical school in Our Lady of Star Sea, and so. It's been interesting, a little different, but it's been all real positive. So far, so good.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. And I've got some comments I want to make about what you shared. Actually, I think Father Lewis, you'd probably get in on this as well. Carrie was saying, you should ask the priest to come up with a list of the top movies for families to watch during Lent. Because I know, Father Lewis, you're an aficionado of movies. And one of the big things that happens in Lent is a restraining of access to like sources of media. And so that's what we've done in our home. But we want to not just give them a no, but we want to give them a yes that is a replacement of the no. And so if they can say yes to good media, good, like for instance, a good movie or a good talk, then that can be very, very helpful. And so parents are forever wrestling with what's going to be good for my kids to watch, what's going to be inspiring for my kids to watch, what's not going to be overly syrupy, devout, religious movie that is like, oh my goodness, do we really have to sit through this? Versus, you know, powerful, like, wow, that's one that we definitely want to watch. So Father Lewis and then Father Nagle, I didn't realize that you were that like sort of tied into or had like that sense of, you know, that I'm drawn to that media as well. And so if we came up with a program like that, would you be able to come up with a list of movies and why?
Well, I've thought of a list of 20 just right now. So,
are you kidding? Really? Oh, just wow. Even in that talk? Maybe we've got a new outline for today's program. There's only one reason I say that is that, and that is because next week we are going to be having the Share-a-thon. And so we'll talk a little bit about that later in the program as well. But next Monday, there won't be a program with the two of you because of the Share-a-thon happening on Friday, so our pre-record time is not going to – it's being crowded out. It's being crowded out.
For a good cause.
Yes. One of the things that's being pruned this Lent during the Share-a-thon is a program with you two good fathers. So I don't know if you could do that just off the cuff. You said you could come up with a list of 20, Father. How about just two? Could you come up with two good movies? Because we want our kids to watch good movies and – we'd love to know what those good movies are and why. But Father Nagle, I'll let you go first, and then if you actually can come up with some, Father Lewis, you want a piece of paper and a pencil? You could. I'll take some recommendations actually live. That would be awesome.
This is happening as you hear it, people.
This is great.
Very exciting.
You see the outline that we have. So this is the drama. What's at stake in the moment? Hear the call and respond. So. No, Father Nagle, do you ever get asked about that by parishioners, or do you have a sense of that about, you know, this would be a great movie for adults or for teens or for kids or for the family?
I'm sure that is a desire. It's out there. I'm not a movie guy myself. I rarely go. If I go once a year, it's amazing. So I am not the probably. If Father Lewis gave his list, I could probably comment fairly intelligently about that, in my opinion. But in terms of no, I'm worthless.
That was very humble, very Lenten of you. I like that. So, Father Lewis, I'm not even going to ask you about your Lent. I'm going to ask you about movies.
All right.
Okay, give us at least a couple of movies to get us launched, and then we'll come back to your Lent.
Well, kind of how you set it up, what I started thinking about was movies about saints, but also classics. I think that it's important that our contemporary era still keep in touch with some of the great classic films. So the two that immediately came to mind were A Man for All Seasons about St. Thomas More and then Beckett about St. Thomas Becket. Great films. I think Man for All Seasons was made in 1960 and maybe a little later. And Beckett, I think, was in 1963 or 4. And they're multiple Academy Award winners and fine films and great dramatic portrayals of two great English saints, both named Tom. So there you go, Tom.
There's something about that yeah. Handing on to the name. I don't know. There's just some kind of saintliness connected with people named Tom, but we'll see. Okay, so A Man for All Seasons. Father Nagle, are you familiar with that movie? What did you think about it?
It's a great movie. Let's put it this way. It's a play. It's a film version of a play. And I think it gets this heart right. You know, it's not really from a Catholic – it's not a Catholic perspective, I don't think, in the terms of who made it, et cetera. It does provide a great portrayal of defending one's conscience. I think the faith element gets a little – you know, it's not so – you know, why he was doing this was not so strong. But I do think it shows moral courage, I guess. So that was what I would say.
The thing about that movie, do you think that teens would go for it? Because the pace is...
Oh, it's quite slow.
It's a little bit slow, and it's a little bit intellectual.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to be able to follow dialogue.
Right.
From the standpoint of following dialogue, it is immensely rich.
Right.
There are some powerful, powerful scenes in that movie. I think of when the daughter comes to visit him in the prison. I think of when he's saying goodbye to his head servant, who says, "You're not going to miss me at all." And he just looked at him with that heartfelt like emotion. "I shall miss you." I don't remember the head servant's name, but that was a very powerful scene. And then of course the scene when he's facing Oliver Cromwell, who makes that claim, right?
Yeah.
"Oh yeah, he said that to me." And he's like, "What? I want everybody to just hear what he just said. Do you think that I would have gone through all of this?"
Right.
And then to him, said that? Are you serious? Right? That's actually a verbatim. That was an actual quote of how it was stated in the movie. No, it's not. But there is some powerful scenes like that in the movie.
I wonder though, Tom. I mean, it's true. I think if, as an old fuddy-duddy, maybe we always talk about this new generation doesn't have the attention span or the concentration or whatever. But I think at least for high school students, one of the things, it wouldn't be for everybody. That's true. But I think high school students are interested in peers and peer pressure and how do you stand up against that and what does that look like? So I think there's an element there that it might be more accessible than you might think to the right high school students.
Yeah, especially if you kind of set up like that. That's a good point that, here's a great lesson that we can derive from this film. See how it plays out as the film goes along. And now the youth might be watching with that added attention because there's something they're looking for rather than just having a direction.
I've got an idea, Father Lewis. You should take your St. Justin Martyr group, the apologetics group, have them watch the movie from that standpoint of standing up for your faith, standing up for conscience. How do you stand up, push back, but remain in a way that is appropriate? And then have them talk about it. That would be really powerful.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think I'll raise it to the group, see what they think.
Nice. So I haven't seen the other movie.
Beckett. Yeah, it's got Peter O'Toole.
How does it end? That was a joke.
It ends with, the king wins, I guess.
Yes, that's right.
No, the king gets whipped.
He actually gets loses, yeah. But
he takes his punishment.
I thought you meant Jesus. I thought you meant Jesus was the king.
Oh.
Well,
he wins.
I went right to the martyr wins.
Yeah.
So.
But Peter O'Toole plays King Henry II, and Richard Burton, an interesting choice, playing the saint, given kind of his private life and real life. But both had brilliant portrayals and telling the life of the friend of Henry II, who through orchestrations of the king arranges for him to be made a bishop, and I can't remember if he's even elevated to cardinal before the end of his life. But he's the archbishop, and at that point, a moment of conversion for Beckett, that we're at odds here with the state. I've given my life now to the church, and it severs the friendship and it makes them enemies. And there's a really awesome scene at the end of the first half that still gives me chills just thinking about it. It's when the ceremony for that formally excommunicates somebody is shown on film, including like the snuffing out of the candle of life of the person whose name was attached to that candle, and then the breaking of it by throwing it on the ground and smashing it in half, and that was a powerful depiction in that film. It's of epic length. I think it's about 3.5 hours long, so it's not for the faint of heart, just lengthwise. But brilliant and powerful performances by the two leads, and I thought it was. From what I've read of St. Thomas Becket, it's pretty faithful to how all that played out, with some dramatic dialogue, of course, but nonetheless pretty faithful.
Nice. So can you think of any movies that would be good for families to watch that are maybe not directly religious-themed, like directly Catholic or about saints, but have a degree of inspiration about them that again, would be like wholesome and something that would draw families in?
Well, there's a film that actually just came out a couple years ago. It's a Martin Scorsese film. So right there, you're like, not family friendly, right? But this is like the only film he ever made that was, in fact, they tout it as Martin Scorsese's family film, and it's called Hugo. And it's about a boy. I think he's orphaned and homeless, living in a train station in Paris, in like late 19th century Paris. And there's kind of a fantasy element to it. He filmed it to be kind of a 3D film, and it kind of plays like one of the early Spielberg films, where there's a lot of kind of this heartfelt kind of fantasy element to it, and showing how this kid can overcome and overcome the adverse situations. He makes friends with the character played by Ben Kingsley, and the villain, as it were, is this comical train station patrolman played by Sacha Cohen. What's that guy's name? Anyway, he plays these goofy characters in films that he makes. But I thought it was a pretty delightful film, and the kid is a pretty inspirational in terms of how he overcomes.
Nice. Yeah. I like that. I think that there's a way in which when you can get to heroic human goodness, right, you can get to that sense of human excellence is virtuous, that is something that is attractive and something that you want to put in front of people. So people who overcome big obstacles and show themselves, they somehow there's like there are typically themes of redemption in there anyways. Mm-hmm. I thought of Cinderella. Mm. There's a modern remake. I was trying to think of the actress's name. Lily James is her name. And, you know, it's just Cinderella, right? But the big but in it is that, and it's not the one that was just released. This is like from 2015. I Googled it while you were talking, Father. You saw me do that. You did see me. So, for me, the whole movie leads up to three words that are said by Cinderella, Lily James, at the very end of the movie. It's like the whole movie is for the sake of those three words as Cinderella is walking out accompanied by the prince to become his bride. She turns to her stepmother, who has just been totally exposed as the one who has beat her down, held her back, tried to, you know, stop her from getting this connection with the prince. She turns and says to her, "I forgive you.
Wow.
I forgive you." And the first time I saw it, I took my breath away and it was all like tingles, like, it was so moving. Wow. And you know, I think I even teared up a little bit. Seriously, it was that powerful that just those three words, "I forgive you." And it was like the whole movie was for the sake of that. And then she graciously leaves. And then, you know, they all reach their ending, the happy ending and the not so happy ending for the others. And it's like, how do you get a theme that says, do you want to learn what forgiveness is? You have to walk with this woman on the journey of how she's been beat down, held back, mistreated, and attempted to be prevented from achieving a beautiful good that was being offered to her. And even after all of that, she can still rise above it and graciously extend mercy and forgiveness. Boy, that is a powerful means of getting across that truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's one of the gifts of movies that maybe aren't like directly religious, but that have the potential of conveying a fundamental truth of faith in a way that is not wrapped in sometimes the more syrupy, devout presentation that is a religious, directly religious movie.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, we're up against a break, but Father Nagel, you're going to have a chance to respond and present your movie. I'm going to put you on the spot here, and if you can't come up with it, Ron's going to have to help you. Ron Belter, the general manager of Sacred Heart Radio, is going to come up with a movie that is maybe along the lines of what I just shared, like a humanly good movie.
Sure.
Back in a minute with more Sound Insight. Welcome back to the program. This is Tom Kernan with Father Kurt Nagel, the pastor of Holy Family. The pastor of St. Monica's on Mercer Island. I am so sorry. And it's the years of thing. It's repetition is the mother of learning here. So, and Father Jeff Lewis, the pastor of St. Mary's in Spokane Valley. So we're talking about exactly what I had prepared extensively to discuss today on the program, which is movies for your kids and your family to enjoy during Lent. So, Father Nagel, what do you got for us?
I have a movie, but before I do that, I just have a question. What did you think? These aren't necessarily my choice, but what was your opinion, both of you, of the Narnia movies that came out about 10 or 12 years ago? There were three of them. Did you see them, and what did you think?
Yeah, I saw the first two, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and then
Prince Caspian.
Prince Caspian. And what was the third one that came out after that?
The Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think I saw that one, but I really, really liked the first one, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I thought it was really faithful to the book. The depiction of the witch was just spot on. And I just liked it. And some of my favorite scenes were, spoiler alert, when Aslan is sacrificed. But the breaking of the altar, like the tearing of the veil, I thought was very remarkably Christological. And then also when he has a side conversation with one of the two brothers,
Edmund.
And in the book, I thought it highlighted what was going on there, Christologically speaking and sacramentally speaking, than the book. And it's clear that there was a confession going on. He's confessing to Aslan, or the depiction of Christ, and they come back and Aslan says, what was done is now in the past, and nothing more need be said. I mean, he says something very direct like that, and that's like, yeah, that's what confession does, and that's what happened. And I thought it was a great film. The second one, I thought they started taking some departures and some dark parts that I think they, the conjuring back of the White Witch, I thought was like, that's a depiction of the preternatural I can do without. And anyway, I could take it or leave that one, but I really liked the first one.
So my take briefly is that the most important line in the book was pulled out of the context it was in, and it was placed to the last line in the movie. And it was Aslan is walking away after the victory has happened, and they say, is he tame? Right? And it was supposed to be Mrs. Beaver that said it in to the kids when they first hear about this lion. Let's go to Aslan and he's going to help us, right? And you all know the line, right? The line is, tame. Of course he's not tame, but he's good. Yeah. Who said, no, tame. Of course he's not tame. Who said anything about tame? He's not tame, but he's good. And that's describing Aslan as, in his strength. What I liked about the movie is that even though it's really plain that when Aslan comes back and then just is able to just wipe them all out, they still have to fight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They still have to battle. And it was... it was very powerful that Aslan still asks something of of those followers of his to put their lives on the line. And the part that makes me choke up is Reepa Cheep, and when he loses his tail, and the followers come after him. Those little other mice, and they're going to cut off their tails too. Oh, so beautiful. Oh, I'm going to cry. It's very beautiful, these scenes. So what about you, Father Nagel? What did you think?
I thought they were very good. I agree, probably Prince Caspian is the weakest one. I like The Voyage of the Dawn Treader as well, including Reepa Cheep. I think again, I've always liked that book, probably of all of them. Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, of course, is kind of by itself. But I thought the Voyage of the Dawn Treader was always an interesting book, and so I enjoyed that movie as well. I was thinking more, though, in terms of To Kill a Mockingbird as a movie that it seems like a little dark, but I think it's about kids, and I think it's about scariness and watching people being strong, Atticus and these sort of things. So I always thought that was a very good, again, it's not syrupy or sappy, but it does, I think, engage in important questions.
What do you think about that movie, Father?
I thought it was good, but... it's the story, the book is got such the trial of Tom Robinson is another kind of martyr figure for there, Tom. Certainly thought of that. The trial of Tom Robinson is of course an important aspect of the book and the chief focus and about the second third, if you can put it in three acts as it were, toward the end anyway. But it's like, I've only seen the movie once, but I remember thinking, it's like they focused almost exclusively on the trial. And there's a whole lot more going on, the lives, the interactions of the characters, the rich tapestry of just human life and community. And in this particular, era, with racial tensions, but class tensions as well. And the kids are trying to figure out, how does the world work? It seems like there's four classes of people. And then one of the kids finally says, I think that there's just one class of people. And maybe that line made it into the movie. It's got to be tricky to make films like that where you try to retain the richness of the story that's in the book, but how to do that when it's now in a visual medium and that doesn't bog down the story, because it works. I thought of the same thing of the new movie that came out this year, Dune. I think that would be an impossible film to make, book to make into a film without making it bogged down if you're going to try to keep the richness of the story. So anyway, I mean, as a movie that stands alone, I thought it was very good, of course, with a profound theme. In comparison to the book, though, it's kind of one of those that the book is just way better, I think.
True enough. Yeah, if you read the book first, it does. And so often movies will pale in comparison, right? So, I really don't care that much for the movie versions of the Chronicles of Narnia, or especially the Lord of the Rings. We've had that conversation before. To Kill a Mockingbird, I didn't mind as much because the story was so rich for me when I read it. I could like superimpose that onto the movie more easily, especially again the scenes that are so powerful to me were at the very end when you meet Boo Radley. Oh, just yeah. So moving. And then the confrontation of Scout with the kids in front of the adults in the front of the courthouse that are there to take Tom Robinson away. And just so powerful. And then the scene where their dad is the one, Atticus, takes the gun to shoot the dog. Mm-hmm. And like, no, don't have him do it because he can't do any of those things. Are you kidding? He's the best shot in the county. You know, it's just like, so many beautiful, powerful scenes that were put forward in the movie. And I love the fact that it's told from the standpoint of Scout as an older woman looking back and being able to kind of revert back to the perspective of the childhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, what about you, Father Nagel? You kind of teed it up for us, but
no, I agree with you. What you just said, I that's kind of my perspective on it. And I saw the movie before I read the book, actually. So for me, it was maybe a little different experience. But a lot of people read the book in school. For some reason, it never was assigned, so to speak, and as a reading book for me. But I don't have much more to say than what you said. But I do think it's a little intense. But I think also in terms of these days, there's so much talk in education about race and racism and all these kind of things and how do you teach that. I think that movie's a better way to teach than most of the schools are doing right now. I mean, I think that would be a good way to, okay, do you want to talk about this? Here it is. Anyway, that's a side note. But I do think that it's a powerful film, including for kids. I think, maybe not super small, but I think if they're a certain age, I think it would be something that would sort of intrigue them, question them, and sort of inspire them.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Father, I'm going to give you, Father Lewis, one more chance. Do you have another movie that you'd like to add to our list of recommended movies that families should think about, or even how about a TV series? You know, that this modern reality of binge watching, it just didn't exist 15 years ago, or maybe 20 years ago, but now it's a very common practice of just kind of going from episode to episode. Is there a particular series that you find you found helpful, or again, inspiring and encouraging?
Well, no, not TV series. Most of my favorite.
Well, Kerry likes Pride and Prejudice, the old British version.
That's because
it's almost like exactly a reading of the book.
Okay, you know, that is. That's a good one.
So detailed, yeah.
Yeah, so. And most of the TV shows I've enjoyed binge watching are not appropriate. For
not
the,
that you're gonna. is this kind of confession time, Father?
A little bit. Where's Aslan? You know, I need to go talk to him. Yeah. So well, I was thinking of another movie though. About the. It's a movie I've been thinking about lately. It might be one of those that the kids can't quite keep up with because it's a very slow burn. But it's called The Conversation, made by Francis Ford Coppola, and starring Gene Hackman, made in the early 70s. And it's only rated PG, but it's got some very adult themes. And the whole thing, he plays kind of like a spy that's listening through audio, you know, the high tech audio devices of that time. To a conversation, he was paid by someone to kind of spy on this couple, and the conversation continually plays through the movie. And I maintain that almost no one I talk to has ever heard of this movie, but I think it's got the greatest twist ending of any film I've ever seen.
I was going to say, you recommended it to us. I watched it.
What'd you think?
I didn't get the ending.
Oh my gosh! Oh,
we're going to have to talk afterwards.
at the time. Because
when you said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's the movie with the ending that was just like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Well, oh, that is so funny. You see, this is where I'm playing checkers and you're playing 3D chess. Okay, that's what it is. So is
this anyway, you know, what's that?
Does this take place in East Germany? Is this the film?
It takes place like in Philly or something.
Yeah, New York City or something. Right. I think it is Philly. Yeah, and they're in a park, and it's just this conversation of these two people talking.
Yeah, yeah. But as a family friendly film that I might recommend, you know, maybe kicking up to more contemporary times. You know, some of those earlier Disney cartoons, the first after they kind of made the resurgence, like with Little Mermaid and Aladdin and Lion King and. And then what was Beauty and the Beast? I think any of those have a fairly strong kind of moral content to them. I'm thinking in The Lion King, there's an interesting contrast between this idea that the main character, the lion, what's his name?
Simba.
Is it Simba or was that the father? Okay, Simba. You know, he has to flee. He's a cub, and then he finds the meerkat and the wild boar, whatever their names are. And
you're not expecting us to know this, are you? I have never watched Lion King.
Oh, okay,
so there's a full disclosure. I missed that whole the whole reality. I don't know if I just lost a lot of listeners right now.
I watched it as a kid, but you know, they're trying to like take care of me, buddy, buddy. But they sing that song that's actually popular, and they're singing the song Hakuna Matata, which means no worries. But I recently read a movie review about it. And you know that's not the good thing. The good thing is that Simba like got out of his lazy life, his lazy malaise life of no worries, because he had a job to do. He had to go back and take back his father's throne and rule the kingdom in peace. But he was severely tempted by his friends that thought they were being good friends to him by encouraging him to live this lazy life. And that could be an interesting conversation to have with kids to look at the. What does it make for true friendship? Do they come along and how do we overcome our lazy selves to embrace the vocation or the challenge or the fate, as it were, God's will for us in our lives that to which we're called?
So I'm going to jump in and I'm going to say that I don't know a lot about movies, but there's a kind of movie that my kids, especially my teenagers, are drawn to. And it's movies that like tell the story of a sports team that's sort of an underdog, and then typically a coach comes in, or there's a tragedy that happens, and then how do they overcome that tragedy, or how does the coach get the team to excel? Mm-hmm. Right. Uh-huh. Now they're not often perfect, but they have a lot of that sense of push forward, suck it up. You know, you can get there if you're willing to work as a team and believe. And then at the end, they do the big reveal, mm-hmm. right? And you get to see the players. You get to see the football players, the volleyball players, the runners, the whatever. And so movies like Remember the Titans is one. Glory Road, I really liked. Coach Carter. I don't know if that's based on it is. It is based on a true story. Coach Carter was another one. Let me see. There's another one about runners in California about the.
I've seen that one. I forget the name too.
With Kevin Costner ends up being the coach who comes in and he basically gets these kids to.
Are they Hispanic kids?
Cross country.
I think they're Hispanic.
Yes,
kids.
I think they like a really in a challenging circumstance and all the and then at the end you know you get to this like big reveal of how these coaches have changed the lives of the whole community.
Yeah.
I just. My kids like those movies, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe they like sports and that's why, but those movies, I find, again, there's that sense of human excellence, when you strive to attain it, can accomplish something that overcomes even really, really big obstacles.
Yeah, right. There's a film of that genre, I can't remember what it's called, but it's got Jim Caviezel as the coach, and it's about that high school somewhere in the South, I think, that had like a 10-year-long winning streak, and then it broke. And the movie is like begins with that game that they lost and it broke the streak. Like they have almost a generation of people that never knew this team to lose. And then it's like, okay, how do we overcome this and rebuild? And do you remember what that was called, Fonagle? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know the film. I do know the film. And I'm sure your listeners are saying, you guys get with it. But I forget.
it's this.
I forget.
You
I
know
forget.
A Kevin Costner movie, but you don't know a Jim Caviezel movie? That is so funny. Okay, I'm going to look it up. This is the miracle of the internet.
Yeah. But I thought that was a I'm pretty sure he was the one who played
When the Game Stands Tall.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a – I thought that was a good message as well that, people – again, it's kind of like this idea of being trapped in a malaise or thinking that you're like the bee's knees and all the rest of it. And this is a – it was like a massive – the way they portrayed in the film, a massive psychological blow to the whole town. I mean, they have the longest winning streak in the history of any sport at any age level, professional or amateur or whatever. This was a massive blow and even some like animosity of disappointed fathers to their kids. How could you have let this happen? And then they want the coach run out of town on a rail and all the rest. And it's really about how they overcame that? How did they come together as a team? How did he kind of function for them as a father figure when maybe their own fathers are like kind of hating on them? And how did they rebuild? I thought it was a pretty inspirational film.
And I think that can speak also to kids today who their pressure to succeed. So how do you deal with the fact that you do lose? And so I think that can be something positive there too, because I think that, it may not be the win streak that holds the record, but it could be. I got my B minus, and I've had straight A's up until now. And so what do I do? What do I do now? I think that some kids can probably relate to that as well.
That's a great point. All right, we're up against a break. When we come back, I'm going to share a couple of movies that are connected to faith and see if this generates anything to you. Back in a minute with more Sound Insight. Hi, this is Dr. Tom Curran, and you know me as the host of Sound Insight. I am also letting folks know that as a realtor licensed in the state of Washington and in Idaho, I love serving Catholic families and others who are discerning a move for yourselves. It's much more than buying or selling a home. It's discerning a whole new life. If that's something that you would find a help in, if I could be of service to you, please be in touch. You can find out more at drtomcurran.com. drtomcurran.com. Welcome back to the program. This is Tom Curran. I'm with Father Kurt Nagel and Father Jeff Lewis, and we've been planning extensively to share a program with you about movies for Lent. Is that a lie or is that a joke?
It's an exaggeration.
An exaggeration. There it is. Yeah. Carrie had said, Tom, Father Lewis loves movies. Have him talk about this. And I said, well, he needs a lot of time to prepare for it. So we gave him about 15 seconds of like wind up. And Father Nagel, you're jumping right in.
Well,
it's kind of a Siskel and Ebert going on here.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, that's all we ever get, 15 seconds for the subject matter of your show. So actually, I'm just rolling with it. It's okay.
It's kind of par for the course.
But you know what? This is a very intentional thing that as I've studied more about how do you make Sound Insight that much more appealing. One of the techniques that I've discovered is that when you have co-hosts that can do this, having things be more spontaneous just leads to fresher conversation.
Yeah.
And so, fathers, I brag about the fact that both of you are so good at being responsive in the moment with insight, and you're succinct, you're clear, it's engaging. And so I'm just trying to tee this up so that listeners get valuable programming, and you get to shine in the gifting that you both have.
Well, you're setting the bar awfully high. One of these days, one or both of us going to come with like a head cold or something and can't think straight, and it's going to fall flat. But hey, you know what? Let's ride the wave while it's there.
Nice. Well, I should say this before we dive back into the movies, and that is in two days, beginning on Wednesday and continuing on Thursday and Friday, is the Spring Share-a-thon for Sacred Heart Radio. And what that means is that while you're going to get significantly the same amount of programming over the course of the day, you're also going to have some moments where folks come on, like myself and Ron will be on with you from 7:30 in the morning until 9. So I'll be on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but I'll be on live with Ron. And we're going to be talking about the gift that Sacred Heart Radio is. And our hope is that as you listen, you'll be prompted to pray and to make a call of financial support. You can make a tax-deductible donation to Sacred Heart Radio. And by doing that, you'll be a blessing back to us as we strive to be a blessing to you and hopefully are. You'll be joining in the mission. Through giving, you join in the very mission that you're supporting through your giving. And in fact, we are in a place of financial need. And that's one of the, here it is, one of the gifts that Catholic ministries and Catholic apostolates and nonprofits do is they give you opportunities to extend your stewardship. The stewardship that the Lord has put into your hands, the good things of this world, including financial resources, and he gives them to you, but they're not only for you. And so it's up to you to discern how to be generous in after the manner of the Lord's generosity to you. So that's what a share-a-thon is. It's an opportunity for us to say, if we didn't need, we wouldn't ask. But because we are asking, and we only ask twice a year for 3 days, that's it, that during those days, you would say, you know what? It's Lent, prayer fasting, almsgiving.
Mm.
Part of the almsgiving, I'm going to extend towards Sacred Heart Radio. So that's going to be the invitation for you to call. I feel like we should give out the number right now. Like that was like a,
yeah.
that's like a pledge. That's a pledge worthy, make a call right now and make a pledge of support to Sacred Heart Radio. Actually, if you do want to do that, go ahead. Let's see if they're ready. So call. You can actually call right now. 800. What's the number? Ron is going to be
949-1050.
I know the number. It's been 20 years. 949-1050. 1-800-949-1050. You can donate online, sacredheartradio.org. Or you can call 1-800-949-1050. That would be awesome to preload some of that giving in anticipation of the share-a-thon on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday of this week. Father Nagel, you've been part of share-a-thons for a whole bunch of years.
15
you
years.
Have, that is a lot of years.
Yeah.
And you also have lots of visibility to the impact that Sound Insight, when you're on the radio, and that Sacred Heart Radio has on your parishioners and the Catholics in your area. I'm going to ask you the same thing, Father Lewis. Do you have any, just an anecdote or just a sense of saying, hey, here's how I know that it's making a difference?
It gets brought up. There's no doubt about it. And sometimes it's like, oh, I've heard you on Sacred Heart Radio. So sometimes it's just the fact that I know they're listening, that they are part of your listeners out there, because it just happens. But I do think I say the same thing, because this is the main thing that happens to me, is that in terms of talking to people who come to the RCIA, that oftentimes they're listening on the radio long before they actually approach anybody in person in terms of the Catholic Church. Because it just they either land on it, or it's recommended, or somehow they find out about it. And that can be a great way to just kind of marinate in Catholicism before you have to actually kind of take a step. So that happens quite, I think fairly regularly on the RCIA.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. A lot of folks that, by the time they come to the church office asking about signing up for RCIA, for all I know, that's precisely the first time they've ever come to any church. But a friend of theirs, was talking to them. And oftentimes a friend of theirs, like you say, Father Nagel, is recommending that they check out this Catholic radio program and maybe this particular program or just anything on that station. And that kind of piques the interest. And then they want to pursue that. They want to go further and they want to go deeper. And that longing and that yearning leads them to find their way to the church office, and we talk to them or to Mass, and then I speak with them after Mass or something. But it didn't begin there. It led to that moment, but it began, further back. And oftentimes, with the programming of Sacred Heart Radio.
So, Father Lewis, you must notice that there are some like new parishioners that have arrived at your parish and even your school.
Yeah.
From Sacred Heart Radio.
Yeah, it's. I'm signing new parishioner letters, I think, on average 3 a week these days. It's pretty incredible. I mean, there's a backlog, so Susie just gives me like a month's worth and says, all right, sign them all. Let's get them out.
So there's a waiting list to go to your parish. I think that's great.
There is. Yeah.
There's only so much space. There's only so much space in that church, and so there's no room for you right now. But be it on the list, and as soon as there is, you too can buy a seat here, a season ticket holder.
There's a stable out in the back. Yeah. So, so the folks that call me, right? So I'm doing this real estate stuff, and folks are calling me saying, hey, I want to move over in the area. And they'll say, hey, where's Father Lewis's parish? So that's pretty cool, Father Lewis.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
I feel like I ought to list you on the bulletin as a member of the parish staff, chief recruiter.
He has to advertise like everybody else on the back of the bulletin.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. I've tried to use that on Father Nagel. He just shut it down. he just said, here's the business manager's number. You know, have the conversation with him. That didn't happen, folks. I'm just teasing. But the gift at Sacred Heart Radio is I could go on and on, and I will go on and on in ways that hopefully are encouraging to you on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday with testimonies of faith from so many amazing folks whose faith has been lifted up, has been restored, has been deepened because of the gift of Sacred Heart Radio. So it's an amazing gift. And I know that many Catholics are looking for places where they can feel really good about saying, I'm giving some of what God has put into my hands. They want to feel very confident that their money's being used in a way that's going to support and promote the fullness of the Catholic faith being preached in a way that's convincing, in a way that's complete, in a way that is courageous. And that's what happens on Sacred Heart Radio. So I really appreciate your willingness to support this share-a-thon. All right. Hey, we're actually up against our final break. When we come back, we have another segment left, and we're going to talk about religious movies. I want to share with you religious movies that aren't Catholic but are Christian and, again, contemporary. Back in a minute with Sound Insight. Welcome back to the program. Today on the program, we're going to review Lenten quotes. No, that never happened.
That ship sailed.
That's the voyage of the Dawn Treader has just left the building. We'll eventually get to quotes in the Easter season. Yes, we'll have our Lenten quotes program. So there's another set of movies that I'm surprised that my kids enjoy. And it's movies that involve typically some kind of religious theme that has like a miracle involved, that has like a tragedy that gets turned into something glorious, or that has an ending that involves like someone dying, but in faith, right? So there was a movie about a musician. What's his name? I Still Believe is what the name of the movie is. It's a contemporary Christian singer, and he marries a woman that has been discovered to have cancer. And ends up marrying her, and then she ends up dying of cancer. And it's just the journey they take together. Mm-hmm. And it is powerful. And I remember watching it and just thinking, my kids are not going to like this. Well, there was they had a chance to pick a movie a few weeks ago, and they picked that movie.
Wow.
They all by themselves, without my influence, said, we want to watch I Still Believe again. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, that's really striking to me. And that's not the only instance of that. There's a powerful story about, what's it called? Something Grace. Moved by Grace or something like that. It's a story about a young lady with Down syndrome named Grace, and a very powerful movie of faith and redemption and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And there's several movies like that. Mm-hmm. And my kids are drawn to them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is that surprising to you, fathers? Or is there something deeper going on there?
On the one hand, it surprises me because these are movies, you know, it seems like with, you know, middle school and high school kids these days, you mention a movie that's not a Marvel movie and you've lost them instantly.
Yeah, no CGI, right?
Yeah, no CGI, no constant action and loud noises and that these two films are decidedly not Marvel, that they would still have, that they chose for themselves to watch it again. That surprises me. But on the other hand, you know, if kids would just allow themselves to be introduced to films of this kind of caliber, I think that they would like them a whole lot more, because there's a rich truth that speaks to them in that isn't just some flashy, you know, action sequence with CGI that, you know, that was exciting and let's move on, but something that endures because it dives down deep into our hearts and souls, and it speaks a larger truth. And to that regard, I think it doesn't surprise me, but that they would go out of their way to be introduced to it in the first place, that's what surprises me. Yeah.
Well, I'm not surprised really either. I think people, we get trained to expect and to watch certain things, but as human beings, we're all drawn to a good story. I mean that literally. A story that's good, that artistically maybe, but it's just that it touches our humanity. I think there's always room for that, and so I'm not surprised.
Okay, so I've got a discernment question for you, and Father, you kind of hammered me on this one time when you found out that my kids watched a certain movie, and so it has to do with at what point, so I've got five teenagers in the house, right? 18, 17, 16, 15, 13, wow. right? And then younger kids. And here's the question. At what age would it be appropriate to let them watch Shawshank Redemption?
Oh, wow.
Because I consider it one of the like most amazing movies.
I agree.
It's most, but it is swearing and oh, it's disturbing scenes and yeah. it is murder and corruption, you know, but it is an incredible movie.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. It's definitely rated R for a reason. That's for sure. But I agree with you. It's one of my top five favorite films. Sometimes it's floating up there at number two. Number one will be Godfather Forever, but that's a conversation for another time. But yeah, I mean, with all that's going on in that film, but it's a beautiful story of friendship, real friendship, and ultimately of hope, that hope has a place. In fact, the subtitle of the story, the Stephen King story that, upon which it's named, is Hope Springs Eternal, because it's part of a larger collection he calls The Four Seasons. So this is like the spring book, and it's called Hope Springs Eternal. But in any event, I think it would be you got to know your kids, what they can handle, and I would definitely prep them. I mean, like in some scenes, the F word is every other word, especially the prison guard captain. That guy is foul, and there's violence, but we know the main character gets kind of pulverized in a sexual sense. Nothing graphic is shown, but it's definitely implied. And it's something that I would watch with the kids after you've prepped them. This is what you're going to see, but this is what's so awesome about it. And that might be worthwhile to do before they leave the house and see it on their own, because that can shock them on their own, but you've had a chance to prep them if they're still in the house. But I wouldn't show it to anyone younger than, I don't know, 17 maybe at the youngest.
Okay.
I have to admit I've not seen it.
What?
Yeah, oh. I don't get out
oh
much.
Oh, my goodness, Father Nagel.
I've heard about it. I would probably be in with Father Lewis, though, in terms of the advice from what little I know. But I think he's probably on in terms of how to discern that.
So there's VidAngel. Mm-hmm. So VidAngel allows you to dial in what you remove from movies. So all swearing and all certain kinds of scenes. And it'll actually show you the scenes that are like, okay, these are the scenes that are going to be eliminated if you do that. Now, frankly, I haven't found VidAngel very easy to work with. It's still complicated. It sounds easy and looks like it in its promotion to be easy. I haven't found it easy to work with. And I don't even know if Shawshank Redemption is one of the movies on that list. But that's a way to access some movies that would have very disturbing stuff.
Yeah.
I know some. There's some who would say it'll never be appropriate even for an adult to watch that movie. Because of the swearing and the inappropriate stuff, it'll damage you even if you're not aware of it, right? Mm-hmm. So there are some who would take that kind of hard line. But I like what you said, Father, about sit down with them in advance, know your son, know your daughter, your teenager, and figure out what's going to be right for them. And I think here's a way I would pose the question. How comfortable will you be watching it with them?
Yeah.
As the movie is going on, how comfortable will you be watching it with them? When I have watched movies with my kids that have inappropriate scenes, principally they're sexual or maybe violent or maybe demonic, one of those three, I actually will look it up and I'll know at this moment in the movie, like 53 minutes and 32 seconds in, this scene starts. And so as it's approaching, I pause it, I forward it over it, and then I start it up again. So I've done that as a way of accompanying my kids in a more intensive way. I'm kind of like a father angel, vid father, right? Yeah. Doing the live editing. But that's a pretty intensive amount of work,
yeah.
And it's not easy to do that. But it does, I think it conveys a message to the kids. It's important what you take in. Yeah. And as a father, if I don't provide a degree of guidance and even restriction, I'm not doing my job.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's helpful at all, but
it's a good advice. Thank you, Tom. VidFather. I recommend it to everyone.
VidFather. Hey, we should copyright that, Father. Every show, Father Nagel, Father Lewis copyrighted a phrase. What was the phrase? The Great Reset or the Great Redo?
Lent, the Great and Holy Redo.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
The Great and Holy Redo.
Or do-over.
The Great and Holy Do-Over. Yeah. Even better. Yeah. There we go.
The Mulligan. Right.
Yes, the Holy Mulligan. He just went up to you, Father Nagel. Father Nagel just went up to you, Father Lewis. All right. All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much for listening. God bless you guys. Join me tomorrow for more Sound Insight.